Future of Finance podcast, where finance finds its future.
Hello, I'm Dominic Hobson, co-founder of Future of Finance. My guest today is Gilbert Verdian, CEO of Quant, a business dedicated to making blockchains work for banks, for asset managers, for insurers, and for technology vendors by ensuring that blockchain protocols and traditional systems can interoperate successfully. Our topic today is how to accelerate our progress towards large and liquid digital asset markets. Gilbert, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Dominic. It's great to be here.
The second topic I'd like to raise with you in accelerating progress towards large and liquid digital asset markets is money. You touched on this in your previous comments. I know it's a specialist subject of yours. What I mean here is the obvious thing that as long as we don't have money, digital money, available on chain, you're always going to have to come off the chain to settle transactions. That makes it very difficult to achieve that T+0 settlement. It obviously raises costs. It maintains various forms of potentially unproductive intermediation, both domestically and across national borders. It ties up capital in large buffers of cash and collateral people have to keep in different markets. And it is a widely agreed constraint for all those reasons on the growth of digital asset markets. Yet the solutions which we've come up with so far, stablecoins are one of them, and you and I have spoken about this before, but they're clearly not a long-term answer because they're not that stable, and they're about to be regulated in different ways and so on. Tokenized deposits seem an interesting proposition, seem to reproduce commercial bank money, but they remain at this point a purely an intra-bank solution. We're not seeing a lot of issues of those come out. And yet central bank digital currencies, which are the obvious answer to this question, you know, putting fiat currency directly on chain in that fashion, whether in its wholesale or retail, that seems still, particularly in a major reserve currency, quite a long way into the future. So what can we do now to tackle that lack of a native digital currency on chain?
We're seeing, you know, with the clients we work with and talk to, we're seeing a huge interest in tokenized bank deposits or bank liabilities for the benefit of having programmability, and that was proven with the work that we did in Project Roslyn with the Bank of England and the BIS, having the ability to program workflows, logic, triggers, etc., in money itself allows you to automate a whole bunch of complex processes, checks, authorizations, etc. So commercial banks are quite well versed in banking and payments, but they're seeing the benefits and the potential with a new form of money and having digital money in terms of digital dollars, digital pounds, digital euros, etc., allows them to serve a market that is emerging, and it is around tokenization, it is around digital assets, and having the existing form of money serve a new form of instrument is just not fit for purpose. You know, there's challenges, there's friction, there's a lot of complex workflows that have to happen in the background just to do a settlement between something that's modern and digital with the legacy. It's very cumbersome. So they are actively exploring and looking at what they can do in the short term, and what they can implement with programmability, with tokenized bank deposits, and how to serve the use cases and the customer needs of today, which is not that far off for them. It's imminent. I mean, you've seen the market expand and grow with ETFs, and now the FCA is allowing the same in the UK. And so there is a need to serve this market, this regulated market. And they're not willing to wait for CBDCs. I mean, they are imminent as well, but imminent from a central bank perspective is 10 years, and imminent from a commercial bank perspective is a couple of years. So we're seeing them step up their efforts in understanding and implementing what programmable payments can look like, what programmable money looks like for their use cases, for their customers, and how they can do that with commercial bank money, with tokenized deposits and tokenized liabilities.
I'd like to tease out, because I think you've said something very interesting there about programmability being the point at which digital money meets payments. And that you think, and I think you were saying this, that programmability is the feature or the benefit which is driving the interest of the commercial banks in finding their own solutions to the absence of on-chain digital money. Am I right to think of programmability and payments as being at the crucial interface in driving progress here?
That's correct. I mean, what we've got today is electronic money, and that's been the architecture and the design from 30 years ago, and it hasn't changed that much. So it's very binary. It's a push and a pull, and all these things happen after the transaction is made. What programmability does is enables money to be digital. So you're actually evolving that instrument to become a digital instrument and a new form of money. And the difference between a digital form of money and an electronic form of money is the ability to have programmability and logic built into the transaction itself, into the money itself. This has been demonstrated in numerous use cases. I mean, we did it with Rosalind. We showed having programmability allows certain conditions to be met, like an event occurs, a trigger happens, an authorization or a release or you know, an event occurs within the transaction flow, and that could be done by the banks, by an authorized third party, and you could build upon that to allow different parts of the transaction to occur, and then money is released if those conditions are met. And it could be very simple. If a fraud check is done and AML check is done, then release the funds. So it's a very simple example. From a end user perspective, it gives people like you and me, consumers and businesses, the ability to code logic into that. And that's, you know, very simply put, we can actually say when my salary comes in, take the direct debits 1 hour after it comes in. So that's the triggers that we implement ourselves. So then we're prevented from being overdrawn. We don't have the friction of you know, having all the texts and messages from your bank that you're overdrawn. And it's just a simple example to show what programmability can look like for us. So having that within capital markets is even more powerful, because then you can automate settlement processes, counterparty checks, post-trade processes, for example, and put that into the money itself. When this happens from a delivery perspective, then release the payment. And it could be almost real time, and it could be on chain. So you don't have to go out of the existing systems to do it. You don't have to go and do correspondent banking. You don't have to wait 3 days for the money to arrive for settlement. All those things become automated and frictionless, which is one of the holy grails of everyone's goal to get to that.
This might seem an odd question to ask, particularly after you've just outlined the benefits of programmable money in making payments more efficient. But I'm constantly surprised when I go around and talk to, you know, quite experienced people in large institutions who still struggle to distinguish between cryptocurrencies and digital forms of money. I wonder if you think that the reputational damage which cryptocurrencies have done to the whole idea of digital money, and the cryptocurrency industry, parts of it are perfectly respectable, I'm sure, but large parts of it have a rather inglorious recent past, and that lodges in people's minds in a way that the successes don't. Now, cryptocurrencies are being brought steadily within the regulatory perimeter in all the major jurisdictions, but I wonder if you, and I risk here going back to our regulatory discussion, I wonder if you think regulators are going far enough in their treatment of the cryptocurrency industry. Would you, for example, it's a thought that occurs to me that maybe cryptocurrency should be regulated like dangerous drugs or alcohol or tobacco. Are regulators doing enough to create regulatory distance between cryptocurrencies and CBDCs and tokenized deposits, in your view?
Look, I think there will always be there. There is a market for that. You know, people see that as an investment, and they can invest to make some returns from that in the new asset class. The regulated side is bringing that into the ETF fold, and that was, you know, done by the SEC, followed by the FCA now, and that allows institutions to invest in that, and you know, investing only for the returns as a form of value. You know, can we get more than 6% return on this year? Is it an asset class that can meet our investors' needs, for example? But I think what will happen is that there'll be regulatory alternatives where you have the protections, the consumer benefits, the legal and the financial protections of investing with regulated institutions, but investing in more regulated assets that are digital assets. And there could be a tokenized fund, there could be a security that's tokenized, it could be tokenized money, and you get the FX in a digital asset form rather than interest in your bank account, and then you could trade the FX, for example, separately to the instrument itself. So there's going to be a new alternative, which is more trusted, safer, backed by institutions and central banks. And there will be an alternative, and there'll be a choice. So do you want to invest in something that is less risky and you have a certain amount of returns, or do you want to invest in something that's more risky, which has a potential of a certain amount of returns, and if something goes wrong, you don't have recourse. Whereas on the regulated side, you do, you know, there's protections and you know, laws built in. So I think having the alternative will allow smart investors to understand that they can have better returns, but in a safer instrument. And eventually there will be that flight to safety, because then you'll have tokenized money that you're paying with that's protected, digital assets that are all instruments that are all already regulated. And you know, as an investor, you get that same experience. It's a new asset class. The way you invest is different. You've got access to more funds. You've got access to better liquidity, and that will allow you to make a better choice to pick the safer option or the riskier option, and it'll be up to consumers. So there will be a market for both eventually.
So you solve the problem of the disreputable instrument by providing a more reputable instrument, and that over time people will can be trusted to make the right choice.
Exactly. It will be consumer choice or investor choice, yeah.